Chapter 16. What can I tell him? Jason Taverner asked himself as he sat mutely facing the police general. The total reality as I know it? That is hard to do, he realized, because I really do not comprehend it myself. But perhaps a seven could. Well, God knew what it could do. I'll opt, he decided, on a complete explanation. But when he started to answer, something blocked his speech. I don't want to tell him anything, he realized. There is no theoretical limit to what he can do to me. He has his generalship, his authority, and if he's a seven, for him, the sky may be the limit. At least for my self-preservation, if for nothing else, I ought to operate on that assumption. Your being a six, Buckman said, after an interval of silence, makes me see this in a different light. It's other sixes that you're working with, is it? He kept his eyes rigidly fixed on Jason's face. Jason found it uncomfortable and disconcerting. I think what we have here, Buckman said, is the first concrete evidence that sixes are... No, Jason said. No. Buckman continued to stare fixedly at him. You're not involved with other sixes in this. Jason said, I know one other six. Heather Hart. And she considers me a twerp fan. He ground out the words bitterly. That interested Buckman. He had not been aware that the well-known singer Heather Hart was a six. But thinking about it, it seemed reasonable. He had never, however, come up against a female six in his career. His contacts with them were just not that frequent. If Miss Hart is a six, Buckman said aloud, maybe we should ask her to come in, too, and consult with us. A police euphemism that rolled easily off his tongue. Do that, Jason said. Put her through the ringer. His tone had become savage. Bust her. Put her in a forced labor camp. You sixes, Buckman said to himself, have little loyalty to one another. He had discovered this already, but it always surprised him. An elite group, bred out of aristocratic prior circles to set and maintain the mores of the world, who had, in practice, drizzled off into nothingness because they could not stand one another. To himself, he laughed, letting his face show at least a smile. You're amused, Jason said. Don't you believe me? It doesn't matter. Buckman brought a box of Cuesta Rey cigars from a drawer of his desk, used his little knife to cut off the end of one. The little steel knife made for that purpose alone. Across from him, Jason Taverner watched with fascination. A cigar? Buckman inquired. He held the box toward Jason. I have never smoked a good cigar, Jason said. If it got out that I... He broke off. Got out? Buckman asked, his mental ears pricking up. Got out to whom? The police? Jason said nothing. But he had clenched his fist and his breathing had become labored. Are there strata in which you're well known? Buckman said. For example, among intellectuals in forced labor camps. You know, the ones who circulate mimeographed manuscripts. No, Jason said. Musical strata, then? Jason said tightly, not anymore. Have you ever made phonograph records? Not here. Buckman continued to scrutinize him unblinkingly. Over long years, he had mastered the ability. Then where? He asked, in a voice barely over the threshold of audibility. A voice deliberately sought for, its tone lulled, interfered with identification of the word's meaning. but Jason Taverner let it slide by. He failed to respond. These damn bastard sixes, Buckman thought, angered, mostly at himself. I can't play funky games with a six. It just plain does not work. And at any minute, he could cancel my statement out of his mind, my claim to superior genetic heritage. He pressed a stud on his intercom. Have a Miss Catherine Nelson brought in here, he instructed Herb Mame. A police informant down in the Watts district, that ex-black area. I think I should talk to her. Half hour. Thanks. Jason Taverner said hoarsely, why bring her into this? She forged your papers. All she knows about me is what I had her put on the ID cards. And that was spurious? After a pause, Jason shook his head no. So you do exist. Not here. Where? I don't know. Tell me how you got those data deleted from all the banks. I never did that. Hearing that, Buckman felt an enormous hunch overwhelm him. It gripped him with paws of iron. You haven't been taking material out of the databanks. You've been trying to put material in. There were no data there in the first place. Finally, Jason Taverner nodded. Okay, Buckman said. He felt the glow of discovery lurking inside him now, revealing itself in a cluster of comprehensions. You took nothing out. But there's some reason why the data weren't there in the first place. Why not? Do you know? I know, Jason Taverner said, staring down at the table. His face had twisted into a gross mirror thing. I don't exist. But you once did. Yes, Taverner said, nodding unwillingly, painfully. Where? I don't know. It always comes back to that, Buckman said to himself. I don't know. Well, Buckman thought, maybe he doesn't. But he did make his way from L.A. to Vegas. He did shack up with that skinny, wrinkled broad the Vegas Poles loaded into the van with him. Maybe, he thought, I can get something from her. But his hunch registered a no. Have you had dinner? Buckman inquired. Yes, Jason Taverner said. But you'll join me in the munchies. I'll have them bring something in to us. Once more he made use of the intercom. Peggy, it's so late now. Get us two breakfasts at that new place down the street. Not the one we used to go to, but the new one with the sign showing the dog with the girl's head. Barfies. Yes, Mr. Buckman, Peggy said and rang off. Why don't they call you General? Jason Taverner asked. Buckman said, when they call me General, I feel I ought to have written a book on how to invade France while staying out of a two-front war. So you're just plain Mister. That's right. And they let you do it? For me, Buckman said, there is no they. Except for five police marshals here and there in the world, and they call themselves Mr. Two. And how they would like to demote me further, he thought, because of all that I did. But there's the director. Buckman said, the director has never seen me. He never will. Nor will he see you either, Mr. Taverner. But nobody can see you, because, as you pointed out, you don't exist. Presently, a gray-uniformed Pole woman entered the office, carrying a tray of food. What you usually order this time of night, she said as she set the tray down on Buckman's desk. One short stack of hots with a side order of ham. one short stack of huts with a side order of sausage. "Which would you like?" Buckman asked Jason Taverner. "Is the sausage well cooked?" Jason Taverner asked, peering to see. "I guess it is. I'll take it." "That's $10 and one gold quinque," the pole woman said. "Which of you is going to pay for it?" Buckman dug into his pockets, fished out the bills and change. "Thanks." The woman departed. "Do you have any children?" he asked Taverner. "No." "I have a child," General Buckman said. "I'll show you a little 3D pic of him that I received." He reached into his desk, brought out a palpitating square of three-dimensional but non-moving colors. Accepting the picture, Jason held it properly in the light, saw outlined statically a young boy in shorts and sweater, barefoot, running across a field, tugging on the string of a kite. Like the police general, the boy had light, short hair and a strong and impressive wide jaw. Already. "Nice," Jason said. He returned the pick. Buckman said he never got the kite off the ground. Too young, perhaps. Or afraid. Our little boy has a lot of anxiety. I think because he sees so little of me and his mother. He's at a school in Florida, and we're here, which is not a good thing. You say you have no children? Not that I know of, Jason said. Not that you know of? Buckman raised an eyebrow. Does that mean you don't go into the matter? You've never tried to find out? By law, you know, you as the father are required to support your children in or out of wedlock. Jason nodded. Well, General Buckman said as he put the pick away in his desk, everyone do his own. But consider what you've left out of your life. Haven't you ever loved a child? It hurts your heart, the innermost part of you, where you can easily die. I didn't know that, Jason said. Oh, yes. My wife says you can forget any kind of love except what you've felt toward children. That only goes one way. It never reverts. And if something comes between you and a child, such as death or a terrible calamity such as a divorce, you never recover. Well, hell then, Jason gestured with a forkful of sausage. Then it would be better not to feel that kind of love. I don't agree, Buckman said. You should always love, and especially a child, because that's the strongest form of love. I see, Jason said. No, you don't see. Sixes never see. They don't understand. It's not worth discussing. He shuffled a pile of papers on his desk, scowling, puzzled, and nettled. But gradually he calmed down, became his cool, assured self once more. But he could not understand Jason Taverner's attitude. But his child, was all important. It, plus his love, of course, for the boy's mother. This was the pivot of his life. They ate for a time without speaking, with, suddenly, no bridge connecting them one to the other. There's a cafeteria in the building, Buckman said at last, as he drank down a glass of imitation tang. But the food there is poisoned. All the help must have relatives in forced labor camps. They're getting back at us. He laughed. Jason Taverner did not. Mr. Taverner, Buckman said, dabbing at his mouth with his napkin, I am going to let you go. I'm not holding you. Staring at him, Jason said, Why? Because you haven't done anything. Jason said hoarsely, Getting forged ID cards. A felony. I have the authority to cancel any felony charge I wish, Buckman said. I consider that you were forced into doing that by some situation you found yourself in. a situation which you refuse to tell me about, but of which I have gotten a slight glimpse. After a pause, Jason said, Thanks. But, Buckman said, you will be electronically monitored wherever you go. You will never be alone except for your own thoughts in your own mind, and perhaps not even there. Everyone you contact or reach or see will be brought in for questioning eventually, just as we're bringing in the Nelson girl right now. He leaned toward Jason Taverner, speaking slowly and intently so that Taverner would listen and understand. I believe you took no data from any data banks, public or private. I believe you don't understand your own situation. But, he let his voice rise perceptibly, sooner or later you will understand your situation, and when that happens, we want to be in on it. So, we will always be with you. Fair enough. Jason Taverner rose to his feet. Do all you Sevens think this way? What way? Making strong, vital, instant decisions, the way you do. The way you ask questions, listen. God, how you listen. And then make up your mind absolutely. Truthfully, Buckman said, I don't know because I have so little contact with other Sevens. Thanks, Jason said. He held out his hand. They shook. Thanks for the meal. He seemed calm now, in control of himself, and very much relieved. Do I just wander out of here? How do I get onto the street? We'll have to hold you until morning, Buckman said. It's a fixed policy. Suspects are never released at night. Too much goes on in the streets after dark. We'll provide you a cot and a room. You'll have to sleep in your clothes. And at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, I'll have Peggy escort you to the main entrance of the academy. Pressing the stud on his intercom, Buckman said, Peg, take Mr. Taverner to detention for now. Take him out again at 8 a.m. sharp. Understood? Yes, Mr. Buckman. Spreading his hands, smiling, General Buckman said, So that's it. There is no more.